27th of November, 1930. Okay, that's your question. What's next?
Why did you come to America?
Well, what happened was my father was living here. Okay. So in 1938, before World War II, my father sent for my mother and I, and we left there and arrived in New York in October of 1938. That's why we came.
Because of the war?
Well, because my father said, come back. You know, he paid for the trip, and we, at that time, everybody came over by ship, you know, steamship.
How long of the trip was it by boat?
All of it. There were no planes in them days. I mean, there was planes, but only the very rich people took planes. But in them days, everybody came over by boat. Or, you know, big boat. And the name of the ship was the Volcania. I remember that. Yeah.
How was the boat ride? Was it rough?
There was a few days it was really rough when we got in that North Atlantic. We stopped, at that time we left Palermo, then we went to, I think, Naples. And after Naples we went to Algiers, then we went to Lisbon, then we went to the Azores. After that it got rough. In fact, the first time I ever saw a banana was on that boat. I'd never seen a banana.
You never seen a banana?
Never seen a banana.
So what did you think of it when you first saw it?
I didn't know what it was. I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
I didn't like it. No, it was not. I didn't like it. I didn't care for it at all.
There were a lot of people on the boat?
It was full. I was 7, going on 8, so I remember quite a bit about it. There's a lot of things I didn't know about it. All I know is that I was sick for about couple of days and thrown up. First, it takes to get your sea legs. So it was quite an experience because, you know, I left one culture and came to a completely different culture.
Right.
Where we spoke Italian, and all of a sudden I started speaking English.
You didn't know any English when you...
Not one word when I got off the boat.
Your parents either?
My father, well, he had been over here he got here in 1920 and then stayed until 1930, then he went back to get married, which was a custom. It was arranged marriage, which proved to be the longest marriage this country's ever had, the ones that were arranged. You know. But no, I didn't speak a word when I got off the boat. I mean, I had no idea what to say or who to say. In fact, when I got over here, they put me, at that time, now they call it special ed. At that time, they called it the combination room. They put everybody in there that could understand. And so I spent about half a year in that combination room with other kids, and finally I realized that they realized that I could do the work, and they moved out of there.
Now, you came into New York when you...
I landed in New York, okay, and my father lived in Monroe. He worked, at that time, he worked at what is called Stone and Mala, and they used to make stokers. Stokers used to feed the furnaces. The little pieces of coal used to go in then that later became auto equipment. But he worked there, and then that's how I got the money to work and bring us over here.
You had to go through customs?
Yeah, we had to go through immigration. In fact, I still have my passport, if you want to see it.
How was that?
I still have, well, because I went back to Europe this year, and my aunt wanted to see what I looked like when I was so I still got my Italian passport. I mean, I'll get it for you so I can see what I look like. That's what an Italian passport looked like. And at that time, we had Vittorio Emanuele, and Mussolini was in charge. It was a fascist state. It was a little different now. The flag has changed since then. That's what it looked like.
I don't see no picture.
Joe picture, my name is Marjanier. My mother and I.
Oh, here.
Yeah,
that's how old I am.
Did you have to take a test or anything when you went through America?
No. Just to make sure that we didn't have any diseases, or penal diseases.
Right.
If you did, they just marked you and sent you right back. Some people will send back. because they could pass the whatever disease control they had at that time.
Yeah, you were looking a little boy.
Well, of course I was.
What happened now?
We get old.
So why did your dad choose Monroe? I mean, out of all the places.
Here's what happened. Usually what happens is that somebody else that he knew came there because he heard there was work here in the 20s. So he came to Monroe, and the guy got him a job. Okay? So at that point, then other people, then my uncle came over, right? And that's like your family, see?
Right.
One called him, and they all came over, and they all come over. That's what happened, you know, you go where the work is at. That's how you happen to get here. So when I landed in New York, it was my mother's cousin. He just died a few years ago. He met her, you know, they put us, and then we took a train from New York into Monroe. That was really, I thought it was enjoyable, the train ride. That's my first train ride, too.
As soon as you got out of customs, you got
No, we stayed in New York for about 3 days. And then he put us on a train. And then, you know, we come all the way out in Monroe. In fact, there used to be, do you know where the community center is at?
Mm-hmm.
The railroad station used to be right there across the street. And that's where the train stopped and we were at. And then we lived on the east side. That's where all the Italians were one time. When they came to Monroe. In fact, if you go down there now, you'll see a lot of fruit trees, and they were all planted by Italians. Oh. In fact, at one time, Italians couldn't live beyond the tracks, but I probably didn't know that.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I had a race?
Well, they had a lot of people in their homes. In fact, like Nick Costello, when he built over in Borges. Because you couldn't get a place over in Hollywood. You couldn't get a lot over there. That changed after the war, though. After the war, you know, soldiers came back and they all took off and got married and everybody went where they wanted to go.
So you guys like lived in your own like little community?
It was all Italians. I mean, if you did something wrong on that street, it was just like the jungle. They had the Jungle Book, you know, the drums. By the time you got home, you got beaten two or three times on the way home. You got beat again by your father. No, everybody took care of themselves. You know, nobody, there was no destruction. Not long like there is now. I mean, people, they cared for each other. You know, I mean, there were jealousies. Now they're always going to be that way. But I mean, nobody was vicious. You know, all the Italians, it was like a family. Everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew everything. You know, you couldn't do, it was quite interesting. You know.
So, how is it different now? Is it like changed a lot?
Well, yeah. After the war, then the soldiers came back, and then they had where they had these people buy homes and start buying all over the place, and so the neighborhood just disintegrated. So before it was a big majority of Italians were down there. There was blacks down there, but there was never any problem. There was never any racial. There was never a racial problem.
Yeah.
You got into a fight. You got into a fight. That was it. Whoever won, that was the end of it. Everybody went their own way, and then, you know. But now, if it's black and white, gets in the fight, it's racial and all this other stuff. That never happened. You know. In fact, when I come over here, you had to call a person that I guess they call them African American now, that's the way they say. At that time, you had to call them Negro. If you just called them black, the guy was bigger than you. You could have your butt beaten. You know. And then it changed to black, and now it's African American. So, but that's what it was. You had to call them Negro. Well, that's the nature of things. Yeah. And you used to call Italians WOPs.
WOPs?
Oh, yeah. Dagos.
When you guys went into town, people call you names and stuff?
I got in three fights when I first went from Lincoln School. Lincoln School used to go from the ninth grade. Not all goes like him, just and then, we didn't know we were poor until we got to high school. We had no idea. I mean, we just didn't know. Because most of the parents were working, they worked at factories, and, they made their own bread. They had, in fact, you could walk down here, what day the bread was made. And then every once a year, they would, all the Italians would get together, and they would bring a big railroad car from Detroit, full of grapes, and everybody would make wine. You could smell that for miles. And that was really a nice time, the way it was. That was enjoyable, growing up in Monroe at that time.
So, You went to school?
Went to Lincoln School, up to the ninth grade.
Up to ninth grade.
And then I went to Monroe High School, graduated. That was in 49. And then a guy by the name of Justin Adusi, you know Gus, right? I remember him and I went to the Air Force together. We joined up for two weeks after high school. So we left Monroe, and it sent us all the way to Texas, with Lockwood Air Force Base. But it was nice. All of a sudden, we got down there, it was 110 degrees. You know, the hottest time of the year. And we had basic training down there. Now, at that time, they had 1 year enlistment and 5 in reserves. So we're down there. We joined, I think it was the 25th of June, 1949. And then, the 27th of June. On the 25th of June, 1950, the Koreans started the war. Okay? So they let us out. Yeah, I was out. I think maybe a year and a half, and then I went to college. And then they called me back because I was a medic. I went back in for 2 more years, and then I got out. I was in the Air Force twice.
Did you have to go to the Korean War?
I was in orders to go, but then they were short somebody up in Hudson Bay, lined it up going to Canada. Hudson Bay, you're at a Selfridge Air Force Base, which is up there. I was up there for a while. I was stationed at Sky Air Force Base, which is near St. Louis, for 1 year. And then I also worked at Consolidated for a while, too. Because in them days, as soon as you got out of service, you can get a job, you know, making, you know, good money. Take care of your family, you know, not like it is now. You know. A lot of factory jobs. Now we had Consolidated, they had about 4,000 people that hired. A lot of equipment was here then, you know, and a lot of other places, you know. So it changed dramatically the number of good paying jobs. You could get a job and take care of your family without your wife working. That was the goal. That now has changed.
Right. Did your dad still work at the factory?
My father worked at the, after Stoner Mauer sold out, after the war, to Auto Equipment. And Auto Equipment closed up, and then they went south. They went to Harlow, Georgia. My father went to work for Consolidated, and he stayed there until, you know, until he died.
And your mom was housewife?
My mom, but she took care of the house, she made bread, you know, and I didn't, you know, I could tell, she did all, you know, everything all the Italians do. They made, you know, make things. We used to can, you know, we used to go out and get tomatoes, bushels of that stuff every year. You know, I like all the Italians do. And that's what everybody did, you know. In fact, the one time during the Depression, you know, my father was telling me that he'd work all day long, you know. And he says, you get maybe a sack of flour. I said, that was your pay, or a sack of potatoes. He didn't buy any money, see. That changed gradually later on, you know, in the 30s, and eventually, because, see, my father, he lost his money in the bank here.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah. That's the reason, He couldn't bring my mother back after he got married. Lost the money. The bank closed up here. He lost all. They lost it. Yeah. And he lost his money in the Bank of Italy. And they were putting money after that. They were putting nickel in the bank after you weren't putting.
In the backyard.
Well, to this day, my sister's still finding money at home. $5 here, $10.
Really?
Oh yeah. This is. Oh, he died in 51. My mother died in 77. To this day, she still finds, you know, $5, $10. They have money all over the place. Okay. But that's what happened.
So, you remember anything of the Depression? How it was?
I got here like in 38, right, which was just before the thing was close to being over at that time. People had jobs, the war started. I didn't see my father at all. Oh my God. After the war started, he worked all the time. You know? I never saw. I used to go to school. And he'd leave for work, and he'd come home late, you know, like he worked maybe 14 hours or more, even 16 hours a day. You know. In fact, the house that we bought on 4th Street, you know how much a house cost? $4,000. That's what it cost. And, you know, but he paid it off before the war was over.
What year was that?
1940, late 43, like December. And
wow.
Before the war was over in August,
Mine all bad.
Beer all off. It was all beer.
Yeah, I was somewhere by a hair subsidy. That's what we paid them fine.
Yeah, I know. I know.
67.
Yeah.
Wasn't that much?
In fact, the first job I ever got, every time I mostly came here from Europe at that time, went to work in Elgin Fresh Nurseries. That was it. That, maybe because they knew fruit trees. I went to work there. I was 12 years old, and the first job I had was making 20 cents an hour. You made 2 hours a day, 10 hours, and you got $12 a week. But in them days, $12...
It was a lot of money.
You could feed a family.
Yeah.
So that was really not that. And then during the war, I remember this very vividly, because then I went to work for Greening, because they paid more. But first of all, they had the Italian prisoners come here. I was an interpreter there. Prisoners from Africa, they brought them over here. Then they left. Then they had the German prisoners. So the Italian, they liked the wine. Because I used to get the medals. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but the Germans liked beer. So I used to bring that, and they used to give me their medals. I used to sell the medals over here, the Italian medals and the German medals, and they found me a few extra dollars. Hey, what are you going to do, see? You know? But that was good to that. And after that, they left. We had the Japanese attorneys, the ones they took all the Japanese people from California, and they brought them inland because they were afraid that they were
right.
And they came out here. Yeah. In fact, even during the war, we had right by there, by Greening's, there was a field out there, and there's a field out here now. You know, out here, we used to be the night base out here.
I don't remember that.
Well, if you go out on Telegraph Road, okay. It's a trailer park, and it's a big open field there. Now, you'll see some, we used to have a night base there. That's when we heard that the Russians were going to attack the ones at one time. But they used to have an airfield there. Land there. From Gros Seal, maybe planes used to take off, land there, and land back over there, and go back. And you know, all you could see, like I said, all you see in them days, tanks, you see all the railroad cars now.
Right.
Was all for trucks, tanks, bombers from going around. I mean, every day. I mean, talking just trains. Day and night. You know, like I said, that's why they won the war, because we had so many of everything. You know. We could lose 1,000 planes, and we wouldn't bother us. You know.
Right, mass production.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you know any? Did any Japanese live in Monroe? They got
no. All the Japanese that came here were the ones who were brought in from
California.
Yeah. They came after the Germans left. And God, the Germans, they had their own food and their own everything. You know, even the Italians had, they made their own. They were making pasta and sauce out there, cooking it out in the field up there every day. Yeah, one guy was a cook. You know, all the Italians can cook, you know that. They're
right.
The one that can't cook. Or make cheese, too. They all could do that. And but every day, the guy would bring them there, and they have the pots and pans, and they make the spaghetti and the pasta and the sauce. That was out of this world. I really ate good. I never liked the German food, you know. They were careful.
So, did you guys have any television?
Okay.
Did you have a TV in the apartment?
TV didn't start till about, I was after the war.
Right.
Before that, it was all radios.
Okay.
In fact, we didn't have refrigeration until about 46. Before that, it was ice boxes.
Right.
I used to come around, and you have a sign out there, you want 50 pounds or 100 pounds. And you 250, you put that in the refrigerator, it would melt, you know, a day and a half, you know. But then after the war, television came like in 47, that's when they started coming in, you know. It was black and white.
Okay.
And they were small. I used to, the first one to come out was like 6 inches. And what was so funny, I went to, a little later than that, when we were in the service, now this is, we're talking about 18 ago. We're sitting there watching the test battery. It just show you, picture of a test, how you could adjust your TV. And people, 18, 19 year old, be watching that for an hour. I was so new.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it went, and how he duty was coming in,
Was that. A voice or two?
Oh, yeah. He had voice, but there was nothing on the picture except a test pattern, you know, just you're thinking that people sit here and watch that, so Television's come a long way since I started.
So when your mom washed clothes and ironed, how'd she do that?
Well, she had a washing machine. You know,
She had a washing machine,
and she took it out, you know, and then they hung it up, you know. And they, outside, in the winter, not in the winter time. The winter time they hung it in the basement. So, and but she would wash it. And in fact, one time my mom used to make her own soap.
Oh, really?
Oh, a lot of times made her own soap, you know. In fact, when we got over here, we didn't even to keep things fresh. What they would do, and I didn't know it until my father showed me. They would dig holes in the outside, you know, in the yard, you know, and then they would dig it, and then below the freeze line. And then for every holiday, they'd get whatever they had to get. They had potatoes, they had whatever they wanted, carrots and different things, you know. Scoop up the leaves and everything else, and then they would have, you know, a towel on it or a blanket, and then get down there and get the vegetables. And they would have one here, one over Christmas, and, you know, for the wintertime. And that's how they had the refrigeration them days.
Wow.
So they were ingenious. They really were, though. Yeah.
Pretty smart.
And then every year, when they used to have a big feast in Magone. Magone is in Medellin.
Okay.
Yeah, but we used to have it over here. And,
10 years.
Yeah, I used to have fireworks every year. People used to come and we used to march all over the east side with the band, and the women would walk and barefooted, you know. But that's all changed, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was quite a tradition, you know, back in, you know, a few years ago. Okay, then after college, I mean, after I went in, and I went to school, and then they recalled me back into service. And I got back out, and I think I had about a year and a half of college. Then I came back.
Where'd you go to school?
Eastern, but at that time it was called Michigan Normal. They changed the name. I figured it was too weird, you know, so they got Eastern Michigan now. Okay. So I went there for about a year and a half. And then I also got me back in the service. After the other service, it was what, 54, about around there, you know. I started a car wash on the east side. I lost money on that one. And then I met my wife, to be anyway, you know, she was my wife then when I first met her.
Was she American?
No, she was born here in Magone.
Right.
See, the reason in them days you were doing deer bar with an Italian girl, because if you went out with her, that would be expected to marry her, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's changed so much, but that's the way it was, you know. I really don't see. Well, I went out with 22, and during that time, both times we had chaperones, so, and that's the way it was. So, but I only had two serious girls. That's one of two girls I ever took home to my family. One I broke up with, and the other one was my wife. And that's the only two people I ever brought home to meet my family. That was it. In the second, you know, that's the custom, you know.
Right.
So, and then, let's see what happened. This is now going to be 56, 57, lost the car wash. Then I went to work at Continental Aviation Engineering, which is Lasky. You know, Lasky Road. Okay. Making jet engines over there. See, I thought when I got out of service, I was going to give me a job as a lab technician. They're making money to take care of my family rather than get married. But how they ain't paying them. They pay like $30 a week, which wasn't very much money. So I said, the hell with it. So I went over there, and I worked there. And then it was an in-kind of job, but it's a defense contract. And the money was taken away. So they laid everybody off. So I said, you know, they didn't like that. Well, then we're talking about 19. I had went back and got a little bit more school on at night school, you know. So in 61, I went on unemployment. Okay. Excuse me, 60. Last bar 60. And I had got my last check. I was interviewing for a job as a probation officer downtown. So I told the judge, I said, I'm leaving, you know, I'm leaving the money because I had a job offered by Lockheed, you know. I was with a family in California, so guests just come in to work Monday, and that was it. So that's how I started as a probation officer. And at that time, all you needed was 2 years of college.
Right.
And then from the probation officer, I became a referee, and then a chief referee, and then I became junior court director, and when I retired, I was probate court director. The one people hired me were the judges. That was 32 and a half years. But in the meantime, we had three kids. Three sons, my oldest is Steven. He is the supervisor of Ford's, I mean, Ford's, my supervisor of Rural Commission. My son John, he's the front of the court here. And my son Michael, he's my youngest, and he works at Jeep. He makes more money than I ever made downtown because he's working overtime. He makes good money, you know that.
That's good.
But, yeah. And basically, I've only moved, how many times I moved for the Camille? I moved from Italy. Was in on 3rd Street for a little while. Then I went to 4th Street. And here, that's it.
So now, when you lived in the East End, yeah. Was there a lot of mafia over there or anything like that?
I'll tell you what, I never heard the word mafia until I got to be older. Until television came out. Before that, I never heard of it. Hi, Michael. This is my grandson, Michael. This is Frank Perna.
Hey.
This is Mr. Pete Perna. He's the barber. We cut your hair one time.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Well, can I ask me on that?
You remember him, Mike? Mm-hmm. You want cookie? Help yourself with cookies, Michael. It's right behind you. A nice Italian cookie. I never knew, I never heard anything about it until after I got in high school. But before that, you know, Italians, they don't care about them. So they, you know, they would talk about that, you know. But that's when I first started hearing about it was in high school.
In high school?
Yeah, in high school. First time I heard the mafia, I never heard it. Not from Italians, from other people.
From other people?
Yeah, never heard from Italians. No. And later on, I realized that they had 52, they had big hearings here about, I don't know if you ever heard of Frank Costello. He was a big mafia guy from Sicily and a couple other people. But that's the first time I ever heard about it. I must have been maybe 10th, 11th grader.
What, and that guy lives here?
Well, you know, I'm going to talk about local people.
Right.
No.
Big guys.
I heard rumors, you know. I know there was. There must have been. A lot of people were involved with bootlegging.
Right. Was any bootlegging going on?
No, there was going on. No question about it. There was going on. In fact, if you go to the cemetery, you'll see a lot of young Italians that died during that time. There's no question there was bootlegging. People were making money on it, you know, they weren't doing anything except the whiskey was coming up in Canada. And they were bringing it, even like in the wintertime sometimes, across the ice, you know. There was bootlegging on it.
But, well, everybody did.
But hey, you better believe it, you know, during the Depression, you know, people...
Kind of survived.
You're going to do what you have to do to survive.
You survive, that's it.
You know, people couldn't buy a coal. They don't used to do these to get on a train. The train was coming this way, Mary. And so, coal train all the way from Mary to Monroe. Well, hey, if you're freezing, you're gonna do what you have to do. And then, if it's coming the other way, they go to Newport and come this way. And that's how they used to get their coal. A lot of things that people did, you know, to survive, just to be able to make it. So there was bootlegging on. There's no question about it. But the only reason it existed is because people in charge let it exist. They were getting paid off. So who's at fault? You know, everybody was making a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Did I ever encounter any serious hatred or discrimination? Yeah, in fact, one time when I was going with this girl, she introduced me as Mario Smith. I can believe that.
Smith?
Yeah, because either I was Italian or I was a Democrat and Catholic. And she was Protestant Lutheran. You know, that's what it is. In them days, the Catholics won't have anything to do with anybody, and the other people won't have anything to do with anybody. Oh yeah, so help me God, yeah. Mario Smith, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. There.
Smith?
Yeah, because they were, I was Italian, or I was a Democrat and Catholic, and she was promised to Luther, you know, that's what it was. The Catholics won't have anything to do with anybody, and the other people won't have anything to do with anybody. Oh yeah, so help me God, yeah. Mario Smith, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. There.
Yeah.
And we broke up that in Detroit.
Did her parents believe?
Well, her parents knew my name. That was her grandmother.
Yeah.
But didn't like Catholics. But my mother hit everybody else too, but that's the way it went them days. Nobody, you know, if you were this or that, you didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm serious, really. You'd be surprised now how we've become, you know, in the last few years. You know. You just, well, in fact, at one time, when I got over here, if somebody was divorced, they weren't invited to weddings, they weren't invited to baptisms, they couldn't go anywhere. They were like that.
Well,
I'm serious. That changed probably in the late 50s, maybe 60s. But before that, you were divorced. Nobody had anything to do with it.
Sure.
It was like that. And it just, the last few, you know, like it's kind of okay now. But then in them days, in fact, the first time I ever saw, you know, at 3rd Street and Winchester. There's a bar there. I don't know if there's any bar. There's a bar there now. But the name used to be the Blue Drop Inn. It has a name. And it was owned by, who was owned by that? Oh my God. Casper, the McGlory. They owned that.
Okay.
In fact, you used to own Casper's Party Store right there. Remember that? On Monroe Street.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how we used to get our fun. And then the days was my father on Friday nights he'd get off of work and take me. They had a gas station on the corner. And they had a big block, about a corner block, about so big you could sit on. So people would get in the block, get out of the factories, and they had their money, they had all their money and payroll, whatever it was. And then about 6:30, they start getting drunk. You know, the fights would start. And Casper and his brother would start throwing them out of the bars. And he used to... And we used to watch that about an hour or so. It was like watching television. The
reasoning on the medical way of doing things has come to be to cure some of these diseases instead of taking them as drugs, rather people take a gene. And the gene replaces so-called defective or troublesome gene. And how do you suppose you can get a gene into a person? You can't inject it, you can't take it as a pill. What would be a good way to deliver a gene into a cell of a person? Well, make a virus, and we can manipulate DNA as a chemical very easily. So take a virus, remove one of the virus genes, and stick the gene that you want to put into the person into the virus, take some cells out of the person, go off and test them somewhere and infect those cells. The human cell is already accomplished by that sort of virus. You will be hearing a lot more about that over the course of your life, I'm sure. No questions whatsoever. Any questions on that? Yeah, Joe. I've been working on it in terms of curing cancer. They're thinking